Before I forget, I'll give a shout-out to Margaret and all of the other Coasties that were doing making strides against cancer event today. That was a lot of fun. In fact, I tweeted a photo of that. I tweeted it, Deacon Punnett, D-E-A-C-O-N, Punnett, P-U-N-N-E-T-T. This is Ian Punnett, Coast to Coast AM. And what I've noticed right away is this new operating system from Apple. I don't know if you've had a chance to upgrade. If you've got an iPhone, you probably have to have the 4 or above. But if you do, if they have it for the other types of iPhones, if you can upgrade to that new OS 5, the new operating system 5, that's kind of cool. It's not the 4S, no doubt. I mean, this new 4S phone that was all the rage on Friday, which from reviews I've read are pretty good. And whether or not 4S stands for 4 Steve or not, it doesn't really matter, as it seems to be the reason why a lot of people were buying it out of respect for Steve Jobs. But this operating system, OS, other Steve, product, whatever. The OS 5 is great. I noticed right away it makes it easier to tweet photos. It makes it easier to do a lot of different things that with just sort of some minor tweaks. It took me about 4 hours to get it installed, but it was worth it. It was kind of fun out today. Beautiful day weather-wise where I am in the Midwest. I hope it was good for you, too, here in the Great Plains. It's going to be like 75 for tomorrow. I hear the rest of the country's doing great. Somewhere down in Arizona, what did I see? Like 97 degrees for a high today. So far, so good. Got to love that. And so I hope that you make the most of your beautiful time. You're going to enjoy the show tonight. It may keep you up a little longer than you wanted to, but that's okay. First, we got some updates to get to, and I'll tell you more about that in a minute. And I'll tell you a little bit more about my ice cream experiment. I was trying to figure something out about ice cream this week as we learned something about the intersection between politics and ice cream. And what did it reveal? I double-checked the facts on that, and I'll get back to you on that, along with stories of messages in bottles, the latest from DARPA, and an update from last week's guest, the police chief of Seattle, Norm Stamper. He's going to come back on for a few minutes to address that story about New York cops who, it's alleged, planted drug evidence on the innocent and how that fits into his book and our discussion from last week. Before we move ahead to this week's conversation about the Pirates of Barbary, it's a book of history, or is it? It was written by somebody who was investigating how do pirates work? How do they work classically? And what's the difference between pirates and how they're working today? How did piracy of the high seas end its terror reign before? And what we might learn from that for what's going on currently on the ocean's blue. We'll get to all that coming up later on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. So all this week I was having this craving for ice cream because of the story about Herman Cain, right? So Herman Cain, running for the GOP nomination, doing quite well, thank you very much. The head of the Godfather pizza chain, which is excellent. I mean, they used to have this like lunch buffet. I don't know, when I was younger and broker, it came in very handy. So Herman Cain here is running for the GOP nomination, and he was saying that he's not the flavor of the week. He is like Häagen-Dazs black walnut ice cream that tastes good all the time. So he kept saying that, and it sounded actually pretty good. After a while, I started thinking about black walnut. I've never had black walnut. I wonder if that's good. I bet it's good. It's Häagen-Dazs. How could it be bad? So I got to talking about this with my wife. We looked up on the Häagen-Dazs website, and it wasn't listed as an actual flavor. Well, I thought, well, okay, that's weird. And then we found out that it is a flavor for Häagen-Dazs. And I thought, well, maybe it's just that they don't have the website updated. So we went out tonight. I just was kind of curious and just kind of got the best of me tonight. And I went to a grocery store and I looked in the freezer section. They had all of the current Häagen-Dazs ice cream flavors. I verified that. And black walnut flavor ice cream is not one of them. Because, despite Herman Cain's analogy, as it turns out, black walnut actually was kind of a flavor of the month. It was a Häagen-Dazs limited edition thing. They don't have it out all the time. It's just kind of a flavor of the month. So, you know, I learned something from that. When if you're gonna use that as your metaphor for the fact that you aren't a flavor of the month, don't pick an ice cream that is the flavor of the month. Maybe that'll turn out to be prophetic. Here's what I can tell you too, is that because then I just had such an ice cream Jones going, I decided to buy Jimmy Fallon's Late Night Crunch with potato chips, that chocolate covered potato chips in the ice cream. And that's pretty good. So far, Jimmy Fallon has my vote until they bring back black walnut, and then I'll get back to you. So coming up next hour, we're going to talk about pirates, the pirates of Barbary, corsairs, conquests, and captivity in the 17th century Mediterranean. There's more to this than just history, however. It's a beautifully written book. It's fascinating, swashbuckling. It's great. But it also gives us a perspective on what's going on right now with piracy and, in fact, how bad the situation was once before, how bad it might get still before people take the steps that they once did in order to fight piracy, and what we may have to be ready to do in the future. And we'll get to that, because pirates are still a problem. In fact, that story from Wired magazine is on my mind. Ship owners were notified that a ship had become hijacked. The Italian cargo ship Monte Cristo was able to get a message out to NATO and to their owners of the ship by using a message in a bottle after pirates had taken their ship. Pirates began to board. The sailors locked themselves in a room called a citadel. When the hijackers disabled Monte Cristo's communications, the crew was forced to innovate. They wrote out a distress message, stuffed it in a bottle, and, you know, threw it out of a porthole into the ocean, where it was later picked up by a nearby NATO ship. Now, you may be thinking to yourself, wait, what? How did that happen so fast? It's a bottle in the middle of the ocean. That would take forever. Oh, yeah. Well, they also threw in a flashing beacon into the bottle. I don't know. I think that's cheating. I don't know why. It's cool. They put a flashing beacon in it and threw it out, and it certainly got NATO's attention right away. But come on, you can't compare that to the old days, to the old school method of a message in a bottle. That would be like getting a postcard from World War II or something, which, by the way, also happened this week. In a very interesting story, some Americans started to get thank you cards from China for World War II, thanking American service vets for their participation in the saving of China. One guy, Ed Densler's mailbox in Texas, got one of these postcards, and he was completely confused as to where it came from. It takes a strong man to save himself, a great man to save another. Thank you for 1944 from China. It turns out it was part of a class project to thank people, Americans in particular, for stepping up for China. But wow, it really started really throwing the participants. They're thinking, this is nice, but okay, from 1944. And that's not the only story that makes you think twice, too, in the news. And we'll get to Norm Stamper coming up in just a second. There's a new DARPA program that's out, in which they have introduced these. They're trying to perfect anyway. We've talked about DARPA a bunch of times here on Coast to Coast. DARPA is going to be having little teeny miniature drones. Little teeny being the unofficial term. Miniature being more accurate. But this is something that's been on the table for a long time, right? We've been talking about drones that could be as small as a fly. But you put a million of them out and get all this data back, but it is coming. And we're getting closer and closer to seeing this technology. In fact, it kind of reminds me of the movie The Avengers with Ralph Fiennes and Uma Thurman, which is not a very good movie, I don't think. I mean, I love the original Avengers, but yeah, this one, eh. But they did have that. They had these little his little hornets that could fire weapons. They're little miniature DARPA things. So if it's like that, a cooler, they might, you know, it'll definitely, well, if nothing else, it'll make a better movie than the Avengers did. Ralph Fiennes, you know, I love that actor. I learned something interesting. His brother, who's also an actor, was a classmate of Damian Lewis. You know that actor? Ever see Band of Brothers? The redheaded guy who played Dick Winters? The redheaded guy who's in this very cool show that's on right now on Showtime called Homeland, which is super good. I swear to you, if you have Showtime, watch it. If you don't, you want to get it. If not, sometime wait for it to come out on DVD and grab the first season, or do what my wife is doing now, which is streaming, you know, whole series just on Netflix. You don't even get the DVD, just watch it. But this Homeland is as good as critics are saying, about a CIA investigator who may or may not be having problems, delusions. But she's following an American POW who may or may not be an actual like Al-Qaeda spy. And it's really well done. All-star cast, all of that. The characters are really well drawn. The dialogue's interesting. Very contemporary conversations about our security here in the homeland. But just overall, it's just kind of a cool show. It's a neat premise, you know, cat and mouse kind of thing. But I was just surprised when I was seeing Damian Lewis, the same guy who was so good in Band of Brothers. And he's talking like he's from London. And it's like, wait, no. It's my fault that I've never seen this guy get interviewed before, but holy smokes. I wasn't expecting that. I thought he was from like Ohio or something, or maybe Upper East Tennessee, where, back to a conversation we've had before on Coast to Coast, an investigation is going into a town that may have illegally profited from those stoplight cameras we've been complaining about here on Coast to Coast. There's a lawsuit now, and we'll get back to that. You know, I think I'll ask Chief Stamper about that coming up in just a second. But the reason why I asked him back to follow up on our conversation from last Saturday, when we were talking about Breaking Rank, his book about sort of exposing the dark side of American policing, was right after we did this interview. Then it comes out that a former New York police detective, undercover detective, has testified saying that planting drugs on innocent citizens was a common occurrence for NYPD officers to meet their quota for arrests. And this is going to shake things up big time. So many cases would have to be reviewed if the officers get named, and it turns into the kind of story which I'm sure defense attorneys were arguing for all along. My client is innocent, Your Honor. But this ex-cop's testimony led to the apprehension of 8 New York Police Department officers in one of the biggest corruption scandals in the Brooklyn South and Queens narcotics units. And that's just that particular unit. The former detective admitted to having planted cocaine on innocent victims to help fellow officer reach his arrest's target. The testimony stems from an incident that happened back in 2008, where the officers were involved in an operation Buy and Bust, a task force that investigated suspected drug dealing at a club in Queens. And according to court reports, two individuals sold Anderson 3 bags of cocaine for $60. Prosecutors claim that after Anderson's buy, he gave the officer 2 of the bags of coke. That officer later claimed that 4 men had sold him 2 bags of coke for $100, and Anderson said that he had bought 1 bag of cocaine for $40, which was not the case. The officer was worried about getting sent back to patrol, you know, and his supervisors getting on his case. That's what Anderson testified last week in Brooklyn Supreme Court. So that story's not going away anytime soon. And it's not just a claim of somebody who is a defendant, but this is testimony under oath. And that made me think of having Norm Stamper back on for a few minutes to comment on that. The book was Breaking Rank. We talked about it last week. If you're a Coast insider, then make sure that you go back and listen to last week's show. I thought it was great. Good evening, Chief Stamper. Do we have him there? Former Chief Stamper? Well, okay. I can't hear you. Chief?
Yes.
There you are. Thank you for giving us a little extra time. I warned you might make a comeback here on Coast to Coast.
Well, that's kind of you. It's good to be back with you.
Okay, so you've heard and read about this story. How common do you think it is, to be honest, and we talked about this a little bit last week, when we talked about all these great movie plots and TV plots and cops planting drugs is one of those. Here's a cop saying, yeah, it was pretty common, and the investigation is growing. Where do you think that's going to go, and how common do you think that is in police departments across the country?
Well, I'm not sure exactly what kind of a half-life this particular scandal is going to have. I can tell you that throughout the history of NYPD and many other police departments across the country, we get virtually identical situations. Police officers stealing drugs, selling drugs, engaged in all sorts of other criminal behavior associated with their own, essentially, drug trafficking. The Knapp Commission, the Molin Commission, both out of New York, really speak to the systemic implications of corruption that is traceable clearly to the drug war. And it's sad, it's pathetic, it's certainly unconscionable behavior, it's certainly un-American, it's unconstitutional, the list goes on and on. Ultimately, it's very shameful behavior, and yet it is predictable. And this will not be the last scandal that that police department experiences associated with drug trafficking and the enforcement of drug trafficking.
And you think that this motive to get involved in drug trafficking or faking arrests or faking guilt on the part of the innocent and all of that could end if we brought an end to the expensive and so far futile war against drugs?
Well, I surely do. I mean, you're looking at a very cheap and easy way for, I called them last week, and I'll repeat the phrase, character challenged police officers, those who are fundamentally dishonest in their approach to their work and presumably to the rest of their lives. So what you've got is a situation in which they are sorely tempted to engage in this corrupt behavior, either to satisfy internal quotas, which is a very reprehensible way to approach a performance evaluation in any police department, or personal gain. And many, many police officers across the country have succumbed to the seduction of that, of those easy pickings.
Right. Did this happen under your watch as a police chief? Did you know of cases like this, or did you hear of how common that might have been for police to plant evidence on innocent people while you were police chief?
We had a situation in the San Diego Police Department. You recall I was a member of that agency
right.
for 28 years before I became Seattle's police chief. And that was scandalous behavior on the part of one individual. As we began the internal affairs investigation, it grew. And as I recall, we were somewhere in the neighborhood of 8 police officers who were involved in seizing drugs and then using them. We didn't have any indication of sales. We did have in Seattle a police officer who was involved once again in seizing contraband and converting it to his own use and providing it to his girlfriend. And it is certainly by any standard corrupt behavior, but it's also not merely embarrassing. It damages the reputation of the organization for years to come.
Well, I know that there's got to be hundreds of cops, though, then. By comparison, that's a low number. So I guess that's the good news, is there are not that many cases.
Yeah, then, we can always use statistics to say we're talking about a very small minority of police officers.
Right.
Well, in truth, this scandal in New York, in which a police officer under oath has admitted to this practice, is sadly not the first time. You recall probably Bill Bratton marching in with a contingent of other police officials and federal officials into what was then called the Dirty 30, the 30th Precinct,
3-0. Yeah, I forgot about that. Right.
Seizing badges and melting them and responding with outrage. And yet it's predictable. And it's as sad as it is predictable.
Can I ask you to comment? Would you be willing to comment on the traffic light situation? And I'm going to put you on hold for just a second, so hang on for a second. The number of municipalities that hand over traffic enforcement at intersections to either private companies that are then sending out the tickets, or even if the municipality is involved, just even the practice of using that type of automated system. We'll get to that, and we'll get time for some open lines, too, coming up on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Ponet. Well, you know, I always love me a little Def Leppard from time to time. Do You Want to Get Rocked? One of my favorite songs of all time. But there's also a good tie-in for that. This new operating system, this new format for the iPhone makes it so easy to tweet. And so I was tweeting out a bunch of photographs tonight just for gigs. I was just sending out just because I can now. You just hit the button and it automatically sends it. It's very cool. So I do that at Deacon Punnett with my Twitter account. And I'm getting close to 2,000 followers. And I try not to send too much. I just try to send some fun stuff during the week. And I hope you like it. Like that photograph I sent of my, you'll see it. I just had an email from Sean, who runs the website on the weekends on Coast to Coast, who sent me a photograph of B.B. King, a photograph he took of being on B.B. King's tour bus. Okay, that ought to be up at coasttocoastam.com. Way to go, Sean. Super cool. Don't know what the occasion was for you to be able to be hanging with B.B. King, and I might add, with Lucille in his lap. That should be up at coasttocoastam.com. There's some great stories that are up there. And it's also the place to go to sign up and become a Coast Insider. That's what happened to me today. I mentioned I was giving a shout out to a couple of people. And I like now how people are saying that to me. They come up very quietly and go, by the way, I'm an insider. Which is their way of saying, I don't stay up to listen to Coast to Coast necessarily, but I catch the shows. Because I'm an insider. And it sounds very mysterious. It's very, you know, it has this wonderful clandestine feel to it. I'm an insider. Glad to have you. And there are also so many other great benefits other than just being able to listen to Coast anytime you want. And you can sign up very easily for just pennies a day at coasttocoastam.com. Pirates of Barbary coming up next hour. We'll talk about the history of piracy, what we had to do to rest the seas from the hands of pirates the last time, and what we might have to do with that again coming up on Coast to Coast. And then we'll get back to a conversation with the Chief Norm Stamper. We were talking to him as a follow-up to last week's conversation as this story has come out about at least 8 police officers in New York that have been accused of planting drug evidence on the innocent just to get their arrest quotas where they should be. And I asked the chief to address the issue of the traffic light. I think it's a scam, but see what his opinion is. This idea of putting up these automated traffic light ticket dispensers. A lot of municipalities are finally taking them down as a violation of our rights. I agree. It's also very expensive to enforce. I agree. But there may even be more to it than that. And I'll tell you about that story, get his reaction, and get a couple of open line calls coming up next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Ponet. Like I said, I'll get to a couple of open line calls between now and the top of the hour. But first, Chief Stamper, the story comes out of Upper East Tennessee, out of Bluff City, where some people are filing the paperwork they need to get a class action lawsuit against the town of Bluff City because of the company American Traffic Solutions, Arizona-based company that has been doing these traffic camera setups. Now, not commenting on the actual legality of it, this particular lawsuit is alleging that the city created a speed trap by dropping the speed limit just before people got to the camera in order to get them going faster than the speed limit. And that that they are also, like a lot of other municipalities, involved in a situation where some private company is essentially sending out tickets to the public and threatening suspension of driver's licenses and that sort of thing. So where are you on that, Police Chief Stamper, former Police Chief Stamper?
Well, call me a cynic, but I do believe that some cities are motivated by traffic safety. People busting red lights cause injuries and deaths. There's no question about that. But I also believe very strongly that many of these cities are motivated by revenue. I think cynicism about that is very appropriate. There are half a dozen states, maybe more, that have actually outlawed these cameras. Arkansas, Maine, Mississippi, Montana, Nevada, New Hampshire, just looking this up online. And these are the states that have said, as a result of the concerns that they have, and particularly when you're looking at private industry sending letters and settling cases without the involvement of the city or the police, that's particularly galling, I think.
Now, this is, you know, this represents the way a lot of cash-strapped departments are. I mean, where they see this as an opportunity to increase revenue and not have to increase the tax base to provide the police work necessarily to do it. Are there any other solutions that you come to mind for, you know, these police departments who just simply don't have the money to keep operating? We know of towns that have had to give up a police department entirely because they just can't afford to operate one.
Well, I'm aware of that as well. These are small cities that have basically said no more police protection. Now, many of them have contracted with the county in which they're located to provide those services. But generally speaking, those that are really strapped financially have essentially wound up on the good faith of adjoining agencies to dart in the event of an emergency and try to handle that and then get back out back to their regular beats. But
that's crazy.
Safety is the number one priority. It has to be.
Yeah. So you're just saying is you this may have been an interesting experiment if I'm going to read between the lines, but this isn't the future.
Yeah. I mean, my personal view of this is I don't like it. I really don't like it at all. I think it's it lends itself to mistakes. It lends itself to a violation of privacy, as far as I'm concerned.
Right.
And I know that people say, well, we found solutions for people, for example, driving somebody else's car through a red light.
Right.
And but how do you do that, really?
Yeah. Really?
I'm not a fan.
Okay. Thank you for commenting on both of those stories. And again, for Coast Insiders, easy to go back and listen to last week's show. And you should. It was really well received. And I think you said a lot of things. I recommended the book just a couple of times this week, Breaking Rank, Norm Stamper's book about his life as a police chief, talking about the dark the underside of American policing. And it's not an anti-cop book. It's a very pro-cop book, but it's a pro-good cop book. And it says that it's harder to be a good cop than you could possibly imagine. And they just don't have the training for it. A lot of the things that are being demanded of police officers to do, and that creates stressors that takes a lot of good cops bad. And at the same time, there's just some bad cops out there, too, that we need to be mindful about. And some of the habits that become institutionalized in these departments that need to be weeded out. So thank you for writing the book. I recommended it twice this week to people who had kids that were going into law enforcement. And I said, great, noble profession, read this book.
Well, I very have a little much perspective. Appreciate that. And I, you know, one of the ways that we can make the job of a police officer much more satisfying as well as safer and more effective is to end the drug war. And I know I beat this drum every chance I get, but people should check the website of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, which is at copsaylegalizeddrugs.com, And we'll see an end to much of the kind of corruption and scandalous behavior that, you know, that brought me back on the show this evening.
Well, not to mention, yeah, I mean, really, when was the last time that a police officer got involved in a bootlegging scandal? You know,
exactly.
It just, you take that off the table and suddenly cops aren't looking the other way for gin joints and, you know, and bootlegging. Thank you, Chief Stapper. You're very kind. And
my pleasure.
Have a great night.
Thank
appreciate
you
that.
Too.
I think that's it's we're mindful of that all the time on Coast to Coast, and so thank you all. In fact, Chris, the last time this came up, last time this subject came up about traffic cameras that are there at stoplights to take photos of you and then to give you a ticket, the last time this came up, my God, we were flooded with calls of people who said this has happened to them. They were stuck with this thing. They couldn't get out of it. But I understand this happened to you too then, Chris?
Yes, sir. I was making a right-hand turn, and this right-hand turn would have been a subdivision, but they ended the road at the ditch. You understand? It only went like not even 30 yards. It's
right.
Just like a pull-in.
Well, we've all seen that, where they were going to do a subdivision, but it didn't get divided yet, but they'd already laid down a little bit of the road, right?
Right. And I come to like a rolling stop. It was I stopped too far into the lane, but I kept on going. And then I just made a turnaround, and I got a ticket for that. But it was in between the lawsuit that they had down here in Fort Myers, Florida, or in Naples, Florida. And I don't have to pay the ticket. I can't open up a store, or I can't get a license to a contractor's license unless I pay that ticket. But, you know, I don't do no work down there anyway, so I don't have to worry about that.
Oh, man.
And then one more thing, they had a big story down here while that was going on, all the lawsuits and everything, and the DOT took 3 seconds off the yellow light. You know when the yellow comes
right.
up on a
yes.
traffic light?
Right.
They took 3 seconds off of that light just to catch people running the red light.
I know this is what we see. This is the pattern over and over again. Many municipalities cannot resist the temptation of shortening the yellow to increase revenue, while at the same time saying they're trying to increase safety, when all they need to do if they want to increase safety and reduce the number of accidents at intersections is increase the amount of time that the yellow
right.
is on. If you do that, well, then fewer people are hurt, fewer accidents happen. But you also get less money because you're not going to get your traffic cam money. Yeah, it's a traffic scam is what a lot of people are calling it. And I understand the temptation, and I know it's very satisfying probably on those times when you see other people run red lights and they get caught. But it's just government by that type of automation. I hope that's not our future. I think we need to stand up against that. And a bunch of calls, open lines. We'll get to everybody here that I can before top of the hour, and we'll go back in time before we go forward again, talking about piracy. Hey, Andrew.
Yes, Ian. Great show, and I really enjoy listening to you whenever I get a chance.
Thank you.
About approximately eight years ago, I had a friend of mine who, before he passed away, he made a confession to me. He had told me about his life in San Diego and what he had been doing and all the things he got away with, which were many, without mentioning any names. And what happened was one day he was leaving his apartment complex, and the chief that you just had on, who I believe was a very honorable chief, he was in charge at the time. And one day my friend was leaving the apartment, and a guy ran past his apartment complex on the street with the same color clothing that he had. And what happened was the guy was taller than him, a lot taller, because my friend is short, or was short, he's passed on. And what happened was right after the guy passed by running, he evidently was being pursued by a police car that stopped, the doors opened, the officer let go of the German Shepherd police dog, and when they saw my friend, he was the only guy around, the other guy turned the corner, the dog came after him, and if the dog's running after you, what would you do? Would you just stand there, or would you be terrified and start running? So he started running. Anyway, he did 3 years, I believe 2.5 or 3 years in prison for that something he didn't do. And he also confessed to me the things that he did do that he got away with, which were major, major felonies. So the point I'm trying to say is we need police. We really do. And without them, it would be a very dangerous situation for everybody, especially in the cities. But at the same time, getting convictions for the sake of convictions, you know, for the sake of, you know, impressive numbers and losing credibility with the public, that's not the way to go. We need to respect our police officers, and they need to respect the citizens and try to do the right thing. And
I think that's I think that's always true, and I thank you for that. You know, by the way, he wasn't the chief of police when he was in San Diego, just Norm Stamper. He was part of the administration, but he wasn't the San Diego chief of police. But you know what, Andrew, you talk about that, and I'm reminded actually of something. I forget how they actually say it in German, if I ever did know it. But the expression, it's a horrible expression, but it's very interesting. But because it speaks to this kind of problem. You're the person that made that confession to you said they went to jail for a crime they didn't commit, but got away with many other crimes that were worse that they were never convicted for. And so the expression in German is beat your children every day if you don't know why they do. So pretty awful philosophy. Actually sounds a lot like some people in my family. I go back a few generations, and that sounds actually kind of familiar to what the overriding parental ethos was. But that's where I think a lot of people do feel about the idea of planting drugs on folks, is you say, well, you planted them on them, they didn't get this particular time, they didn't do it this time, but they did it many other times, so it all comes out in the wash. I just don't think we can have that kind of court system where it all comes out in the wash and it's left up to the police officers to do that. I think it's better to just convict people on the stuff they did that you can catch them doing. And if it's imperfect, let's have it be imperfect that way. Olivia is in Washington, D.C. on Coast to Coast. Olivia?
Hi, Ian. How you doing?
I'm doing so well. You're on Open Lines. Go ahead.
I have a particularly horrible experience that I'm trying to come to grips with along the topic you were just talking about. Some vice squad police set me up and threw up one bag under my car, and they saw me walk away, and they did that. And then when I came back, they bum rushed me, and one of the policemen crawled under the car and said it was mine. And it has really been a horrible experience.
I'm sorry.
I am taking that to trial, and I'm demanding that they prove that. But it's just sad because they make a note that I was gone for 17 minutes. And in reality, what did I do wrong when I parked my car for them to actually look at a clock and see how long I was gone?
Right. Yeah, what did they – that's a really good point. So they say they clock you being gone for 17 minutes.
Yeah.
What did they think you had done? And then why did – if they thought that you had been – guilty of some sort of drug use or drug sale or something like that, what was the point of waiting for you to come back to the car? Why didn't they just catch you right after they saw you do it? If you supposedly threw your drugs.
They never saw me do anything.
Well, of course, because you didn't do anything.
Right. I walked through an alley and came back to my car.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And it's just sad that they have to go to those type of measures for convictions.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I think your point's a real good one. I think you're right in wondering that, and I think good luck to you on that fight. That's a little hard to, you know, to disprove a negative kind of a situation, but maybe you can do that. I hope you can. Joe is in Eastern Washington on Coast to Coast. Joe?
Yeah. Hey, Ian, I want to talk to Chief Stamford's, you know, red light running camera scam.
Okay. Well, it's not his scam, but...
Well, okay.
Right.
But what I hear from other radio stations, particularly in Texas, is that they're finding out when these cities try to discontinue it,
yeah,
that it's covered under NAFTA, just like this highway they tried to push from Mexico up to Quebec. The same corporation that was behind that owns the contracts or, like, these derivatives for these red light running camera revenue. And you can't get out of it unless you go through the United Nations.
Oh, you can get out of it. If you Google it, Joe, you can see municipalities who get out of it. It's just what they found was at the beginning here. I'll shorten it up a little bit for you. Is that these contracts were written so into the favor of the operators of these red light cameras that when the municipalities try to get out early or tried to even get out for legitimate purposes, they ended up having to pay anyway. And it was mostly because at the time they were in love with the idea of what all the revenue that was going to be coming in. And like a lot of plans, when it didn't pan out, these other people, they got their angle covered. And it's the municipalities that are stuck. The taxpayers, of course, are stuck with that. All right. So it's another kind of piracy, if you ask me. What a transition next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett.